Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Good afternoon. I'm Sanjay Basin. I'm the president and CEO of Federal Home Loan Bank of Dallas.
Sanjay, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk a little bit about your current role, current organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
As I mentioned, I'm the president of Federal Home Loan Bank of Dallas. So Federal Home Loan Bank system was created in the 1930s. It was primarily Depression era related instrumentalities that were created to support mortgages, mortgage banking, liquidity for the financial system. So there are 11 Federal Home Loan Banks right now. There are five states that come under Federal Home Loan Bank of Dallas, primarily Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, and New Mexico. So any financial institution, whether it's a bank, credit union, or an insurance company, can become a member of a Federal Home Loan Bank. A Federal Home Loan Bank is a wholesale a bank. So generally, when banks need money, they come to a Federal Home Loan Bank. So that's the primary role that we play in. In terms of my career, take you a little bit into my past. I grew up in India. I was born there. My father was part of the Indian Navy. So most of my childhood was growing up in naval bases. Growing up in a naval base is a unique experience by itself. My undergraduate is in civil engineering. 4 years of civil engineering was enough of civil engineering for me. So once I completed those 4 years, I went into information technology sales, worked on the selling of hardware systems and putting in infrastructures, managing large accounts and so on and so forth. And then decided I will do an MBA and came to Indiana University and got my MBA in 95 to 97 timeframe. From there on, it's been a typical immigrant story. Started with small firms worked for a valuation firm in Jacksonville, Florida. A year or two, and then moved to Portland, Oregon, worked for a firm that was buying BNC loans. From there, I moved to Indianapolis, worked for Bank One, and then moved to Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago when Bank One merged with JP Morgan. For Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago, I joined their capital markets desk, was responsible for hedging mortgage pipeline and pricing of mortgages. Slowly took over the investment book and purchase of mortgage-related assets. Then in 2008, I became the head of capital markets for Home Loan Bank of Chicago. Around about 2011, I took on the responsibility for the member side of the business, which is essentially where home loan banks provide funding to members in exchange for collateral that members would pledge. So designing those member strategies and became responsible for those things in addition to managing the balance sheet. And then in 2014, as the CEO job at Federal Home Loan Bank of Dallas opened up, I took on that role, and I've been in that role for the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. So that's a quick flyover about my career across various industries.
Right. Well, that's very exciting. And thanks for sharing that, you know, very diverse backgrounds. You know, a lot of similarities come from immigrant background as well. Myself, I, you know, find a lot of kind of similarities in the career journey from that perspective. I think that's very interesting. In a sense, you know, you spend a few years, you know, quite a few years in the banking sector, in mortgage industry, you know, more specifically. What are the different trends that you're very excited about these days? What are you researching? What is, you know, where's the most innovation is happening?
Yeah, so definitely from our perspective and what we are looking at, level of automation and the level of process improvement that is ongoing is exciting. I was joking with somebody yesterday, like 3 years from now, when we hire somebody, we would say, okay, here you are hired and this is your bot that you're going to manage. So the current challenge for us is to, human capital is our most important capital that we have, and how we use them, what work we allocate to them, and what it gets utilized in, is pretty important to us. And so taking those things out where a person has to spend non-productive time is a key area of interest for us. So RPA, automation, we're spending a fair amount of time on this. An example that I always give is you spend more time when you're doing a presentation, you spend more time on making the presentation look right than you spend on the content piece of it. really going to each title and making sure each title has the same font, same thing, is something that you should be able to do automated way rather than you doing it. So when we look at an analyst today versus what an analyst will be doing 2 years or 3 years from now, the job would be more to looking at the data and analyzing the data rather than collection of the data, running the data, parsing it through. So that piece will be handled by automation.
Oh, that's great, Sanjay. And thanks for sharing some of the insights in terms of the different trends and, you know, things that, you know, you're very passionate about in terms of what's coming up in the market, what's the next big thing. The other prevalent topic that we cover on the podcast quite often is all around innovation. And I talk to a lot of executives and companies of various size, and it's always interesting to hear their perspective and strategies on how to build and foster that culture of innovation within your organization. Can you share with us some of the practical recommendations that, you know, you implement on a day-to-day basis to build that culture of innovation?
Sure. So I prescribe to the old theory that the star that you see right now has been dead for a long time. So that applies to all products, all services that you have. What are your true stars today? If you don't innovate, don't change, those are, with time, those things are dying. And it's important for what is going to be successful next 5 years from now, you got to seed that thing today. Because if you don't seed it today, you would not see the fruits of what your seedlings were in 5 to 10 years from time when your star, today's stars die out. So for us, it is important to we are a B2B company, right? So for us, it's important to understand what our member needs are, the people who borrow from us. How are those needs changing? And then developing products to allow for something that we will be able to meet our members' needs, our customers' needs. So a lot of this decisions are based on where do we think our customers' business is going to be in the next 4 to 5 years, anticipating that. And then building products that will be there to meet those needs that will be there. So we are primarily in the financial sector. And primarily we do funding for our membership. So it is on that spectrum, we look for the changes that are taking place in the interest rate market, and then what would the product design need to be, what changes could be there on the member end. In a lot of way, our approach to the product portfolio is when somebody is using you, it's like cures that you have. You don't know which one you want to take out, but you should know that it is there. And you can utilize it based on the situation that will come up. So a lot of the flow of information should take place from people who are dealing with our customers, anticipating the needs and changes that are taking place. We will go into discussions with some of the futurists and see how they are looking at how our people who we do with business with, how their business is going to change. And then we spend a fair amount of time looking at the markets and looking at what the market changes will be or what the interest rate cycles could look like. And then how do we take into account what products would work for our customers. So that goes into our thought process.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. No, those are definitely interesting perspectives when it comes to innovation. And it all also boils down to kind of walking the walk, especially at the executive level, when you take on some of these experiments and you create that environment for others to be, you know, to have the resources, to have the autonomy to execute on that, validate the ROI, and I think only then take on that and as an actual project. It's really some of the ingredients when it comes to really fostering the overall culture of innovation within the organization, regardless of the size. You briefly mentioned when we were talking about the trends, something around, you know, human capital being the most important assets for you and your organization. So when it comes to talent acquisition, especially in the current market, being such a candidate-driven market with so many opportunities out there for, you know, for gig workers, for consultants, and, you know, whatever the case may be, just share with us the strategies that really help you succeed in that space when it comes to talent acquisition, surrounding yourself with top performers. What are some of the things that's working for you, and maybe on the other side, what have you learned through this period?
Yeah, see, you raise a very important point about process and structure and philosophy on hiring. Most hiring is always done based on what you have done before. And I've always found it to be pretty flawed metric to take into account what someone has done before, as using that as a benchmark to qualify them for a job. Our firm is large in assets. Like, we are about 60 billion odd in asset size, but we are only 200 people company. So every individual that we bring on is an important member of our workforce and an important member of our, is an important colleague. So people go through three phases of interviewing process. There is not a single individual that comes on to the bank who does not meet the executive panel. And the executive panel comprises of me and two other members of the executive team. And the two other members of the executive team cycle in and out based on a time period. And the reason we do this is, one is to convey the importance of the person who's coming in, for them to know that they are important. And it's an important hire for us every time we make that hire. The second is also to give, as much as it is our choice to make who joins us, it is a choice that the individual is making to join us too. And we want to give them a perspective of what the executive management's perspective is. So give them this opportunity to ask questions, to try and get a better understanding of what our goals are. So we try and do it through this interview. essentially when I, so I'm involved with virtually everyone that comes on for my firm. It's the single biggest job that responsibility that I have. So when we are doing this, I am essentially trying to answer a few questions. One, what has this person solved before? How did they go about solving it? What problems did they fail? What problems did they face? Where did they fail? How did they grow from that failure? That is pretty important to me. The second aspect that is important to me is in terms of what investment are you making in yourself? How do you go about on a path to learn and path to grow? From there, what we try and project is, can the person do the current job and will they be capable enough to do whatever may be the next job? And what could be the next openings that this person could apply for and could work for them? So we'll try and look and project that. So that ends up being our process. When it comes to senior management, we take a different approach. We do go through the initial subject matter interviews and things like that. And then we ask for whosoever would be the person, what would their vision be to the job? What would they want to, how would they grow their area? What would they like to accomplish? How would they approach their team? What is their philosophy about how they do management? And a basic question on what are your base principles on which you manage work and how you go about doing work? So we try and answer these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what you said at the beginning when it boils down to kind of that flawed approach to talent acquisition or even interviewing based on your past experience. And it kind of brings me to a point that I always try to emphasize when I hire, when I interview, it's, you know, focus on the strengths that are missing on your team versus what is the weakness that we can tolerate in that particular candidate, you know, especially during the interview process. So I think that's very interesting, correlates with exactly what you were talking about. And you beat me to the punch in terms of some of the questions that you like to ask during the interviews, because the whole interview process, I find that to be the most challenging aspect of talent acquisition, because interviewing is very subjective, but it's also a combination of art and the science. It's very hard to master. It all comes with that muscle memory and the skill that you develop as you interview more, but a lot of times we don't interview a lot. It only happens through a certain period of time when we need a particular candidate. So I think that's a big challenge. But on the other side of the coin lies the very important element of retention, where talent acquisition is great. So, you know, you succeed in that space, you can attract the top talent. But retaining that talent is a whole other element to that. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, your strategies to help retain the top talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a good point. The talent is what you have, right? And it's important for the investment that you make into them, especially when somebody is 1 or 2 years into your organization. At that point, you are the one that has invested, and it's important for them to stay and pay off on that investment. I think it comes down to, basic principles of what drives a human to choose where they work. I do believe one of the important components for everyone is sense of achievement. We spend a lot of time at work, wherever we work from, a large portion of our day goes towards work. And you need to drive a level of achievement that comes from doing the work. So it's important how we go about, in a very thoughtful manner, go about our task, our goals? How do we set stretch goals? That becomes an important component of our work life here. So for our organization, we set quarterly goals. While there are annual strategic plans are put together, but goals are quarterly. And at the same time, we want to give people a sense of accomplishments by setting those quarterly targets and making corrections as and when they're needed. The second aspect to this is empathy. People do look for, does the person whom I'm working with, does the organization that I'm working with, do they care? Do you care about them as individuals personally? Do you care about them as a talent? And how do you invest? When you say you are an empathetic organization, how do you invest into them? Being able to raise your knowledge, being involved in things that are cutting edge is an important aspect for us. One of the things that I tell everyone is my fundamental principle that comes towards talent management is I don't know where your next position would be. It could be here or somewhere else, but I always want to play a role in making sure that you accomplish what you can accomplish and what you're capable of accomplishing. So it's important to put down knowledge goals, growth goals, making those opportunity and resources available to everyone. And the last piece in this becomes is, are you part of a community? And how does your team work? What additional things you're doing? It's addressing the whole self, whereas individual is just not the technical aspects of what they do, what their compensation is, but what additional interests do they have and how could we help them grow those outside interests? How can we get them involved in the community? What role do we play? So we as an organization always, we choose one central project that we do as an organization together. So we'll do a habitat build, for example, that's, and where everyone is involved with that piece. So one charity we choose, then we let various departments choose on a monthly basis what charity they're involved with. And then creating an environment of knowledge and growth. For example, our groups would meet for TED Talks during their lunch hours where an employee will present a TED Talk. So give other avenues of growth which could be completely different from their technical area or subject matter expertise. And then having various groups that support your particular interests that you may have, associating with like-minded other colleagues and having the opportunity to do that. So a community focus to support you as an individual and addressing the whole self that you are. And eventually you hope that this provides people enough reasons to be here because they believe that they're growing their talent. And every individual that I meet with or talk with, I tell them, look, your career itself is a balance sheet, right? Which has assets and liabilities. And as it goes with assets, they depreciate every day. So it's important for you to add on new assets. So for that reason, you need to keep on adding knowledge. And that's the only way to be growing because the next generation that is coming has a better technical skill set than what we have. And for us, the knowledge curve is very important to keep on addressing and growing on the knowledge curve.
Right, absolutely. I think that's a very interesting framework is, building and fostering that culture, you know, the culture of retention. At the end of the day, it's building an environment for your, you know, your colleagues, your employees to succeed. And like you've mentioned, you know, some of the philosophy to, you know, not really having a clear picture where you're going to be next, but if you can create that environment, that springboard for them to develop those skills to become better, or, you know, whatever the case may be, so that they can succeed with that next level up. I think that's very unique and very strong leadership perspective. So thank you for sharing that. When it comes to your own content diet, in terms of the resources that you consume on a daily basis to self-educate, to stay ahead of, you know, on the trends and things that are going on in your industry or whatever the case may be, with so much information being thrown at us, I'm always fascinated and learning how people are selective when it comes to exposing their mind to only certain information that they want to be. Share with us some of the resources that really help you to stay ahead of the curve.
The beauty of the world that we are living in today is there are a lot of resources available, right? So the challenge becomes choosing what resource you're going to use. There's not a topic on which you cannot educate yourself or learn. It just becomes important that how you go about doing it and what do you do. In general management stuff, I look at various podcasts, authors at Google, speakers at Stanford Business School, things that are put outside than the traditional New York Times podcasts and other podcasts and things like that. And then books that are relevant to what I am doing at that point of time. So that becomes a resource. And then for example, in case of RPA, when we said we will go on an RPA journey within our organization, it was important for me to do some basic, roll up my sleeve and do some basic RPA. So I took the UiPath RPA starter course. My point of view always has been on a knowledge is the level of knowledge lets you ask the right questions. There are various ways you can ask the right question. One is you can hear from someone something and then ask the right question. The second is you know something and then you ask the question. Introspection is probably the most important tool that I have. And for me to be able to introspect, the first step is knowledge and gathering the knowledge, and then asking myself the questions around whatever the subject matter is. So my process has always been gather enough knowledge, then ask yourself questions, and then choose the path that you want to choose. So those are the steps generally I follow with anything that is in front of me.
Right, absolutely. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, like we were talking about with information overload, it's important to have, you know, somewhat of a strategy to select the resources that you want to consume on a daily basis, because at times I would catch myself looking at the clock and I'm like, well, where did the time go? And just going down the rabbit holes without even realizing that, you know, that was not the original intent. So for me, that's a constant struggle, the constant reminder to keep myself honest from that perspective. Sanjay, last but not least, what are you currently reading in terms of the book? And what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that?
Yes, so currently I'm reading the Obama memoir, which is Promised Land. Not a management book, but that's what I'm currently, that's on my bedside table. A few recommendations if people are looking for a recommendation, both on the digital side and on the book side. On the digital side, if there were three videocasts that I could tell people spend, you had only hour and a half to spend, I would say, listen to these three. The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch. If people have a chance, it's a 1-hour long exercise, but beautifully put together. Steve Jobs' commencement speech at Stanford, probably there is more in it than a lot of books would have. And J.K. Rowling's commencement speech at Harvard on importance of failure and what you learn from there. So that will be on the digital side. On the book side, two of my favorites in terms of understanding yourself. The book that I cared most as a teenager was Jonathan Livingstone, The Seagull by Richard Bach. This is about a seagull and his growth from not being the usual person as a member of the seagull. And how do you approach excellence? How do you approach teaching? How do you approach sharing of knowledge? And then Carol Dweck's growth mindset. As you go on any journey you go, the most important journey is your self journey and where you understand yourself. How do you operate? I think that's a journey that everyone should complete before they try and make other changes.
All right. I love these recommendations, and we're going to add those titles and authors to the show notes for our listeners. Sanjay, can't thank you enough for your time today. Very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with a lot of guests is a follow-up episode in about a year, revisit the conversation from a year ago, see how much of change transpired, and see if things are still applicable. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Sure. Thanks, John. It's a pleasure. Hope somebody finds this useful. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.